Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. And Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
What we up? Got a good one. Got a good one today.
Yeah, you always bring the juice for our fans, right?
Look, back in 2017, this was something that, especially here, you know, and Louisiana was a big story and ended up being a national story of epic proportions. And right. The way this one ends in Bloody Angola is maybe not what you would expect.
Exactly.
But as we always do, we like to give you the full story here. So we're going to take you back to September 11th of 2017. Of course, everybody knows that. You know, September 11th and what that is known for. But this is 2017, and at 12:38 a.m., three shots are fired into the door of a home in the Hickory Ridge subdivision of Baton Rouge. Now, two people were present in the home at this time, but thankfully no one was injured. So before we go any further, let me tell you a little bit about Hickory Ridge subdivision, because that's going to take or play kind of an important role in this case. Hickory Ridge is on the south side of Baton Rouge, y'all. I grew up not too far from the Hickory Ridge subdivision, maybe just a couple miles. It's what you would consider kind of an upper middle class. There's a lot of doctors in that subdivision, a lot of lawyers and professionals that live in that Hickory Ridge subdivision and the surrounding areas around it. It's not an area which you would have been accustomed to hearing gunshots.
Right, not at that time, for sure.
Definitely not. And really rare in that subdivision during that time in history. And then now, in this case, there's something else that was kind of rare during that time, and that is the residents of that home were Black. The mother, Tanya Stevens, who was a nurse, was at home, or actually she was at work at that time that the incident occurred, but she had two adult sons, and they lived with her, and they were at home during the time. And it's worth noting that at that time they were as I just said, they were the only black residents in that subdivision.
Only black family, yeah.
And of course, that's going to play an important role.
Right. And so, y'all, the police get the call about the shots being fired. And hey, this is an affluent part of Baton Rouge. And I'm sure in a scenario like this, especially in the area the shootings occurred at, you had what I call an ape or an acute political emergency, right? Everyone responded, but no one actually saw the shooting. So there was no vehicle description or suspect description. And the police only had three spent shell casings from a 9mm handgun and one projectile to log as evidence. By projectile, we mean the bullet that was recovered from the scene also. But on that same day around 2 p.m., the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office received a call from an employee of Jiffy Lube who said he saw someone hiding what appeared to be a gun in some bushes near their building. So the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office followed up but had no reason at the time to make a connection to anything else other than, you know, they were looking for a gun. But they found no gun in the bushes and no video was taken in the incident. So the responding officer took a report, and in that report, he noted that the employee said the person hiding the gun was a white male in a red car.
Yeah, so you got these two incidences taking place, and they're kind of close to each other, but they're just reports.
No reason to connect anything.
Right. So, y'all, the very next day, which is September 12th of 2017, Custom Security, which is a privately owned home and business security system company in Baton Rouge, they're rather large. They call police and they report an incident that occurred as they were looking at their own security through their own cameras in their parking lot, where they see a white male in a red car get out of his car in that parking lot and remove his license plate. Mm-hmm. They also told police at that time it appeared that he placed a gun into the trunk of his vehicle on the cameras they were seeing this. Now, at the time, BRPD didn't really dispatch anybody to the scene, but they did take a report, and they noted in that report the details that I just told you. Now, fortunately, the folks at Custom Security, you know, were smart enough to take that video footage, and they just kind of put it on a jump drive, and they were like, you know, we need to at least keep this on file
in case something comes out.
They found it very strange, and someone over there was sharp enough to put that on a jump drive, and that would be a key piece of evidence later in our story. So police, they still haven't really connected anything. They just appear to be three separate incidents. And it's not like these cops are talking to each other.
Right. I mean, and they're catching other calls and they're doing their shit. And really, there's no crime been committed.
That's right.
So then that very same night, the night of September 12th, 2017, at 10:32 p.m., at a bus stop at 3400 block of Florida Avenue near Acadian Thoroughway, in Baton Rouge, police responded to a shooting. Now, at the scene, police found a homeless man by the name of Bruce Cofield, y'all, and he was 59 years old, and he was shot to death. Witnesses at the scene described a white male dressed in tactical gear driving a red car. Now, there is some video of the scene. However, it's so grainy, it really can't be used, y'all, and they can't get that much out of it. Now, Bruce Cofield, he may have been a homeless guy, but that doesn't mean people in the community didn't know him. He was actually well-known in the area, and I'm going to read you an article from the newspaper the day after he was found shot to death and give you a little bit more idea of what we're talking about. So the article says, it's titled, "Man Shot Killed on Florida Boulevard Late Tuesday. Neighbors Say He Didn't Bother Anyone." This is from September the 13th of 2017. A man was fatally shot on Florida Boulevard at North Acadian Thruway at about 10:30 p.m. Tuesday, said Baton Rouge Police Spokesman Sergeant Don Coppola. Bruce Cofield, 59, who is believed to have been homeless, was found in the road dead from gunshot wounds. Markia Johnson, who lives near the intersection, says she heard about 12 shots fired. Six shots, then a pause, then six more. "We heard it all," Johnson, 41, say. I hate to say it, but I hate Baton Rouge. Johnson said her son saw Cofield after the shooting and recognized him as a homeless man who often sits with a sign at the intersection. She said they know him as Mr. Bruce. The man didn't appear to bother anyone. Not to get shot like that, Johnson said. It's senseless. Coppola said there are no suspects or motives in the shooting. Johnson said she had recently bought Cofield some food and given him some money after talking with him. Johnson, who moved to the capital city about 5 years ago, says she plans to move soon and take her sons, 18 and 19, with her. I do not want to see my two boys dead on the street, she said. The killing is the 71st homicide in East Baton Rouge Parish in 2017, and Coppola asked anyone with information on the shooting to contact the Violent Crimes Unit, right?
Now, that's important in that, you know, this is not something, and I mean murders, y'all, in Baton Rouge at that time, were not something that were uncommon.
Right, 70 something already. And
September.
Right.
And you know, so homeless guy gets shot and killed. You know, they're working it, but this is not something to where it's just an all points bulletin to work this thing. So the same day that the article came out that Woody just read you, at approximately 10:46 a.m., and this is September 14th of 2017, at a bookstore known as Books A Million, the manager of that bookstore calls police to report the theft of a book. Now, the book that was stolen was titled The Ultimate Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Right. Very popular book by Douglas Adams.
Right.
Police take a report and some corresponding video of the outside of the building. They looked at it. You couldn't really make out hardly any of it. And they note that the book thief was a white male driving a red car. The manager of that store actually got a good look at the guy that stole the book. Still, I mean, it's a book theft.
Right.
Petty crime, $10 book, right? So because of that, I mean, they take a report, but they don't start digging through things to try to figure out who this guy is. They just note it, and in the event it may come up later on. These all just appear, y'all. All these things we're telling you as random calls at this point. Nobody's communicating with each other saying, hey, this guy mentioned a red car. Did you see a red car? And none of that's happened. So the same night, September 14th, at approximately 11:08 p.m., police respond to a call of shots fired at 3014 Alaska Street in Baton Rouge. And they find the body of 49-year-old Donald Smart. They also find 10 spent rounds from a 9mm handgun. And there were several credible eyewitnesses describing a white male in a red car. And police are starting they're kind of starting to figure out there's a connection between this scene and the murder scene they just worked a few days before involving Bruce Cofield, because at both scenes they had a report of a white male in a red car.
Right. And lots of rounds spent in two homicides.
The manners in which they were killed. Right. And look, it could have been the same deputies working both scenes. I mean, it's around the same time of night.
Right.
So I'm going to read you an article real quick released by the newspaper the day after Donald Smart was found murdered. And it says, Baton Rouge Police, this is September 15th of 2017. Baton Rouge Police identify Alaska Street shooting victim. A 49-year-old man was found fatally shot Thursday night in the 3000 block of Alaska Street, Baton Rouge Police spokesman Sergeant Don Coppola said. Police are investigating after Donald Smart was found lying in the road suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. Smart, of 812 Roosevelt Street, was shot at 11 p.m. He was declared dead at the scene, and Baton Rouge Police have not yet identified a suspect or motive. So, still, you know, in all of this, you're seeing these articles and there's no like red flags really coming up yet. Although behind the scenes, I'm sure the police are starting to seem like, connected.
You know, it definitely was the same homicide investigators that are working it. Right.
Yeah.
So this is a situation where a suspect really fucked up that. I mean, to put it bluntly, he just flat out killed the wrong guy. And Donald Smart was very popular in the Baton Rouge community, and he had been a dishwasher for over 20 years at the very popular LSU eatery known as Louise Cafe. Now, I've eaten there a million times after going out, and most, you know, it stays open all night and everything, y'all. But, you know, Smart had been walking to work when he was killed, and people were outraged. This was a good person, a working man, a family man, and, like, people were pissed. I mean, basically, he was a good dude. He always had interaction with people over the years and when he's in the restaurant and everything else. So we move on, y'all, to September 15th of 2017, and a huge break in the case occurs when police used ballistics, and they proved that the shell casings collected of both Bruce Cofield and the Donald Smart murders matched the same gun.
Uh-oh.
Right? This coupled with the manner in which they were killed, shooting from a car, then getting out and finishing off the victims, execution style, y'all, as well as both scenes indicating a white male in a red car, it left no doubt to police that these murders were connected. Now, look, when we do these stories, we want to make sure we always give you a sense of who the victims were. So I'm going to read you an article put out just after Donald Smart's death that really did a good job of that. And this article was released the day after the ballistics matched the shell casings to the same gun. So the title of the article is "This Is Wrong." Popular Louise Cafe worker remembered as hardworking whistle as you work guy from September 16th of 2017. Donald Smart consistently showed up for his overnight shift as a dishwasher at Louis Cafe in a spotless white t-shirt and a bright white Nike tennis shoes. And somehow, despite filling one of the messier jobs at the restaurant, the 49 years old always kept them that way. "It stayed white," said a smiling Fred Simpson, the general manager of the restaurant, right off LSU's campus. "And this is Louis Cafe. This is the 24-hour diner at the doorstep of the number one, I don't care what anyone says, party school in the country. And this is the night dishwasher. In white shoes, white shirt, and it wasn't because Smart stayed out of the way or lacked dedication. It was the opposite. The 20-year veteran dishwasher was just that good at his job," Simmons said. "I've seen 26 years of folks washing dishes in a busy diner, and this guy is untouchable," Simpson said Saturday. "When you have an employee like Donald, he's the type of person who's going to make the person next to him better." Now, Smart was walking to his Thursday night shift when just a half mile from the 24-hour diner, he was gunned down in what law enforcement officials called the second apparently random fatal shooter that week. Fatal shooting this week. So, y'all, they made mention of Louis Cafe manager in the article, and we have a short an emotional clip from the manager of the eatery where Donald Smart worked, and we're going to play that for you now. So here is what that sounded like.
"Like, I'm talking to you so that, you know, that somebody knows that, like, this isn't just a murder victim. You know, this isn't like, this isn't just some dude. Like, this is important people, you know? And like they all are, right? Like, every single person that dies that you see that's a statistic or whatever, they're, you know, they're somebody's Donald, or they're somebody's, like, they mean something. You know, and like, we all have, like, you know, we're not perfect, nobody's perfect, you know? But damn it, if this guy wasn't close when it comes to the job that he did. And like, if you, I don't care if like dishwasher is low on the totem pole, or if late night dishwasher doesn't reach your standard of what a quality career is. This guy outworked so many people. And I will love that man till the day that I die. So thank you.
All right. Now, another really important step happens on September 15th. And you remember we told you about the folks from Certified Alarm and how they had a video of a guy pulling off a license plate? Well, right. When Donald Smart was murdered, the headlines were so massive that everywhere you went, people were talking about this white guy in a red car. Right. Certified Alarm, no different than anybody else. Employees there were like, wait a minute, we got that video of that white guy in that red car. Right. So they were kind of smart enough to call police again. And they said, you know, we put in a report about a video. Do y'all want to see this video? And now the police were like, well, hell yeah, we do. Now it's seeming like something that may be important. So the police go and they pick up that video on that jump drive from Certified Alarm. And on the video, they not only see this guy and he's taking off a plate, but they also see this guy take duct tape. Right. And he had like one of those little small American flag stickers. Mm-hmm. And he took the duct tape and covered the sticker.
Right.
Which was affixed to the back window. Right. And he also took some duct tape and he put it over a dealer sticker. So it's just basically a sticker saying you bought it at XYZ Ford, that kind of thing. And now when you see people doing that,
there's a reason.
Yeah, there's definitely.
Just like taking a license plate off. There's
exactly. So police also note that the vehicle has a small but recognizable dent in the back bumper in the video. So what do the police do? Well, they meet with everyone. They meet with Uniform Patrol, State Police, call everyone, all these lieutenants basically into this room, and they say, get with your guys, and here's a picture of what this vehicle looks like, because both of these homicides have been matched to the same gun, and we think this vehicle has something to do with it.
Absolutely.
So every uniform officer basically in the state gets this APB, if you will. And then police get with the media and they release an article, which essentially becomes like an APB for the whole city of Baton Rouge. Because the police knew one thing. Both of these guys were black. They seemingly were killed for absolutely no reason, as if they were targeted. And the individual that killed them was white. And they knew we're going to have a major problem if we don't solve this case real quick.
Oh, okay. It's escalating, right?
Right. So newspaper article comes out. And the headline says, this is September 15th of 2017. The headline says, all-out hunt in Baton Rouge for gunmen linked to two apparently random fatal shootings. Baton Rouge Police began a citywide manhunt Friday for a gunman believed to have killed two pedestrians this week in apparent random shootings. Authorities linked the fatal shootings through ballistic tests and launched on Friday what one official described as an all-out manhunt for the suspect. Described in a law enforcement document as a white male of medium build with a military-style haircut who may be wearing a tactical vest. This is our top priority, interim Baton Rouge Police Chief Johnny Dunham said Friday. We have tons of officers looking for this shooter. The gunman is believed to have fatally shot two men this week, and we told you all about that. Police have released few details about the shooting, both of which happened late at night between 10:30 and 11:15 on a Tuesday and a Thursday. A witness told The Advocate earlier this week, and that was the newspaper, that she heard a dozen gunshots. We told y'all about all that. So police are starting to realize they have a problem. And it goes on to say a national ballistics database connected the two killings, and Baton Rouge detectives have urged neighboring law enforcement agencies to help them search for the man. So there's a manhunt basically going on right now. Right. In the city of Baton Rouge for this guy.
Now everybody's looking and, you know, in
Bolos.
Right. Be on the lookout for, right? So y'all, on the afternoon of September 16th, the BRPD officer Raymond Taylor spotted a vehicle that matched the description, complete with the dent in the bumper and the American flag sticker. In fact, the officer that spotted him was working extra duty for free that day, just to search for that specific vehicle.
Wow, shout out to him.
Right, straight up shout out. So he pulls it, he rails it in, and then he follows the vehicle, and he calls in because he's waiting for backup before pulling it over. And he pulls the vehicle over a few miles down the road from where he spotted it. Police then detain Kenneth Gleason, a 23-year-old white male, and take him to the headquarters for questioning. They obtain a search warrant for his home, and while there, they found some marijuana and human growth hormone in the bathroom of the home that he shared with his parents. They also find a speech he had printed out by Adolf Hitler, right? Although they felt they did not have enough yet to charge him with the murders of Smart and Cofield, they do book him for the drugs they found in his home, and they were able to get a sample of his DNA, which is huge.
Yeah, that is huge. And at this point, police have a suspect in jail, and they're pretty confident it's him. Everything on the vehicle that they were looking for matches, even down to the dent.
Right.
So they get some DNA, and what the suspect doesn't know at this time, the police knows that they're attempting to pull off a miraculous break in this case, which is to see if they can manage to get what's known as touch DNA off the shell casings and match it to Gleason. Right. Now, this type of DNA retrieval, y'all, is an absolute long shot at best. They're working behind the scenes to get the shell casings analyzed quickly, and they're trying to do this so fast because he is on jail, y'all, for drug charges, very marijuana, small drug marijuana, charges.
Yeah. And marijuana and the human growth hormone.
Yeah. So. I mean, nothing, you know, he's not in there for 600 pounds of cocaine or anything. So they're trying to hurry this up while they can still keep him in jail, but it didn't happen. Right. On Sunday, September 17th, he's actually released from jail on a $3,500 bond on those drug charges. So police are like, shit,
right.
He is either going to run or he's going to continue killing. They needed to get him back in jail and fast.
Right.
So they managed to do just that, y'all. On Monday, September 18th, 2017, he's rearrested. And guess on what charge? Remember that $10 book
we
were telling y'all about from Books of Millions?
First book, yeah.
Well, it just so happened that the suspect's picture was all over the news. Obviously, this is high-profile stuff. They find an Adolf Hitler speeches in this guy's house. The news is all over it. And the Books a Million manager happens to see his face on that Monday. And he calls the police and he said, hey, that's the same dude that stole the book.
Remember, he told him, I got a good look at him, but the book, they're not going to go beat down the bushes. They're not going to put that on the news, right?
That's right. But police, they're like, you got to be kidding. You sure? Can you pull him out of the lineup? Yes, absolutely I can. So police go arrest Gleason for a second time and put him back in jail on the book theft. But now they know he's going to make bail soon on that charge.
Right.
Look, honestly, a $10 book, it's a sign out bail typically.
Right.
And the very next day, right before he is able to make bail, they get the break they need. State Police Crime Lab pulls off the impossible, and they match that touch DNA found on the shell casings to the scene of the Donald Smart murder to Kenneth Gleason. As I told y'all, that's known as touch DNA. It's almost never enough DNA to be useful in a case, and it's very difficult to retrieve.
Right, and people get the wrong idea about DNA. They automatically think it's, you know, guaranteed, it's just not. And touch DNA is like
like fingerprints.
But a lot of times, just because I touch this table right here, right now, and pull my hand away, doesn't mean my DNA is going to be on there.
It's
a lot of different circumstances to go into it. So they get the break, right, y'all? And so they file new charges against Gleason, this time for the murder of both Smart and Cofield. And it goes before Judge Trudy White, who I've been in her chambers many a time, for a bail hearing. And rather than tell you about what transpired, we have the actual audio from the bail hearing. And y'all, this was not actually in front of the judge. It was done basically on closed circuit television where he's on camera communicating with the judge, meaning he's doing it from the prison. They found a lot more cost effective to be able to do these hearings where the judge is got them on video than it is transport them back and forth to court. So let me, here's what it sounded like.
Oh, Gleason.
Okay, Mr. Gleason. All right, sir, your name and address.
Dan Gleason, 5144 Sandy Ridge Drive. That's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
All right, sir, you've been charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder. The court is not setting any bail on that. You've been charged with 2 counts of attempted first-degree murder, $20,000 each. 2 counts of illegal use of a weapon, $5,000 each. Aggravated criminal damage to property, $5,000. Because of the first-degree murder charge, you will sit until your matter is resolved. All right, so we had the Mr. Lena interview you or attempt to interview you, and you have a real serious charge. And so the note she says is that you have refused to answer any more questions without your attorney present. And so that's a good response. And you have lawyered up, so just follow the instructions of your attorney, okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck to you.
All right, thank you.
All right, sir. All right, so we'll get back at it at 8 o'clock tomorrow, gentlemen.
Okay, for
Marlon,
is this guy $1,500?
All right, thank you.
Okay, and for this guy, Gleason, he just needs to follow his attorney?
Yeah, he has no bail. He has set bail on the charges that he could be set, but he can't bond out.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so you can just put no bond.
Excuse me, one question. Wait a minute. Are they going to take me off the suicide watch? Can I request to be?
Why don't you have your, you don't, okay.
Oh, medical
will do that? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, Miguel.
I think what we might need to just, let me ask you this, Deputy, Mr. Gleason, come back for a minute. Do you want us to contact your lawyer and let him know that you're on suicide watch or what?
I haven't talked to him since I've been brought here, so I would like to, yeah. I would like him
okay.
to.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so we'll give him a call or a text, all right?
Okay.
All right. All right, he'll come and handle it. All right, thank you. Okay, we can go off the record now.
All right, so you heard it. No bail for Gleason, and if you notice, he was asking about the suicide watch. Now this come into play hot and heavy in this story. So now everyone is wondering, who is this 23-year-old kid who looks clean cut, seems to come from a good family? And digging in his past, you would be shocked to know that Gleason was not the typical Aryan Nation stone-cold killer you see in the movies. I mean, this kid was an Eagle Scout, y'all, having earned his badge at 18 by building risers for a local church. He's also a graduate of one of the most prestigious high schools in the city of Baton Rouge, known as Baton Rouge High School, which is a magnet school with former governors of the state of Louisiana as graduates. And I'm going to read you this article put out just a couple of days after his charges for the murders of Smart and Cofield. So the article is titled Man's Path from Eagle Scout to Alleged Killer Baffles Family. This is from September 20th, 2017, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. An Eagle Scout at age 18, Kenneth Gleason graduated with honors from one of the Baton Rouge's most elite schools and enrolled at Louisiana State University. 5 years later, the 23-year-old white male was jailed on charges he gunned down 2 black men and shot up a black family's home last week in a string of attacks that police say may have been racially motivated. Gleason's arrest shocked and baffled relatives. Carrie Hiley, a maternal aunt who lives in Galveston, Texas, said, She had never heard of her nephew express any racist views. His family didn't teach him that, Holly said Wednesday. None of us feel that way. Gleason wore a T-shirt bearing the name of the Boy Scouts Ranch in New Mexico when police officers led him in handcuffs past a bank of reporters Tuesday outside of Louisiana State Police headquarters. We were shocked to learn about the allegations against this individual. This behavior runs counter to everything for which the Boy Scouts of America stands, says Gary Mertz, a local scout official. He could face a possible death sentence if he's convicted in the killings of a homeless man and a dishwasher walking to work. In each case, the killer opened fire from his car, then walked up to the victim as he lay on the ground and fired again repeatedly. He is also charged with firing gunshots in the home of a black family that lives three houses down from him and his parents. Investigators said surveillance footage and DNA on a shell casing linked him to the crimes. And authorities found a handwritten copy of an Adolf Hitler speech at Gleason's home. Holly said she hasn't seen Gleason since a family trip to Thailand nearly 2 years ago. She described him as quiet, polite person who didn't fit anything violent. None of this makes any sense to me at all, she said. Gleason graduated cum laude from Baton Rouge Magnet High School in 2012 and became an Eagle Scout later the same year, a distinction he earned after building choir risers for a local church, according to the Advocate's newspaper report at the time. Gleason attended LSU from the fall of 2012 to the fall of 2013. He then transferred from LSU to Baton Rouge Community College. Gleason faced his first-degree murder charges in the shooting deaths of 59-year-old Bruce Cofield and 49-year-old Donald Smart. And Cofield, who was homeless, was gunned down on the street corner on September 12th, and Smart was shot on September 14th on his way to his job. I feel confident that this killer will have killed again, Police Chief Johnny Dunham said. Gleason's attorney, J. Christopher Alexander, said his client vehemently denies guilt, and we look forward to complete vindication. Gleason had a brief court hearing Wednesday and was ordered held without bond. According to a video of the proceeding obtained, which we played for y'all, that hearing was held by Judge Trudy White. Do you want us to contact your lawyer and let him know that you're on suicide watch, the judge said. I haven't talked to him since I've been brought here, Gleason said. Well, give him a call or a text, the judge said. He'll come and handle it. And neighbors said they occasionally saw Gleason sleeping in a car parked outside his parents' Baton Rouge home where he was living after a trip to Arizona late last year. It's not clear why he went to Arizona, but while he was in Phoenix last December, Gleason was arrested on charges of shoplifting wine and razors. Mm. Police said he was homeless at the time. The case was dismissed after he completed a diversion program. Tanya Stevens, a black woman who lives three houses down from Gleason's parents, said she never interacted with him before the shooting at her home. And Stevens said her two adult sons were home, and she was away at her nurse's job when three bullets pierced the front door and struck furniture. Nobody was hurt. I never paid him any minds, Stevens said. Authorities said ballistic tests determined the same gun was used in all three shootings. Also, they said the DNA found on one of the shell casings matched genetic material on a swab they took from Gleason. And investigators have not found the 9mm handgun, but said Gleason bought such a weapon last November.
There you go. So police are really putting things together. And it's important to note something that we hadn't told you about yet, that we wanted you to hear in that article first, and that was way back at the beginning of this story, when we told you about him shooting, or we told you someone's door got shot through, that was, you heard it right, his neighbor three doors down from him in that Hickory Ridge subdivision. So same street, picture your neighbor three doors down. He went and shot through their house.
And y'all remember, that's the very first crime we told you, and that was in the string of this series of crimes.
That's right. And this was not a this was not your prototypical criminal here. Now, he had some issues. considering where his parents lived and what he mentioned in that story, that he would actually sleep outside in his car, people would see him. He obviously had parents that loved him, but maybe he was going through some issues, which explains the shoplifting and all of that. And so they, you know, they were probably trying not to enable him, but at the same time wanted to make sure he had somewhere safe to sleep. So they let him sleep in the, you know, I guess in the driveway of the house in his car.
Right.
And with the location in which they lived, they were probably, people that were doing the best they could and had, you know, right, what you would consider an upstanding family. So Gleason sits in jail, y'all, and he's awaiting trial. And on April 15th of 2021, his trial starts. Now, in opening statements, lead prosecutor Dana Cummings.
Shout out to her. She's a pistol.
There you go. She tells the jury Gleason targeted these men. She kind of hinted at the skin color as being a possible motive, and she laid out a basic picture of what she said Gleason's four-day reign of terror was. And in that statement, she also mentioned that it started when he opened fire on his neighbor's home. Investigators testified who said Gleason fired three rounds into that front door of that house while Corey and Joshua Anderson were inside. Both men testified that they heard a car door slam and a car door speed off after the shooting, but they didn't see anything as far as the color of a car or the color of a person. Joshua stated he was just frozen in fear, and I can understand why. The mother of Corey and Joshua was also called to the stand. That was Miss Tanya Stevens, who was at work. Remember, she was a nurse when her house was shot at, working an overnight shift, right? Prosecutors had her clarify that her family was the only black family on that street at that time. So you can see, you know, the angle they're working here. The state also called neighbor Mike D'Amico to testify, and he said that he heard shots immediately and jumped up from his desk, looked out the window, and called 911. D'Amico said he initially saw a car stopped in the road outside, but by the time he grabbed his pistol and went outside, which was around 6 minutes later, the car was gone, but Gleason was standing outside by his mailbox. Well, here's the thing. He lives three houses down. You're not going to think he had anything to do with it. Now, Gleason's defense, which included Ashley Earle, Jarrett Ambo, which should bring a bell to some people because of a big Netflix series that was just recently produced in which he was the defense attorney on, and Hayes Towns III, which is another popular defense attorney in Baton Rouge, pressed D'Amico on his version of events, asking him if he thought it was possible that Gleason was in the car that sped off, looped back to the house before D'Amico came outside. And D'Amico, he didn't really offer a clear response. So what the defense was trying to do there was just kind of tear up that timeline just enough to put doubt in the mind of the jury. Several detectives also testified about evidence being found at the house, including several bullet holes and bullet casings. The keeping of evidence was under intense scrutiny, as it always is, by defense.
Yeah, chain of custody.
Cummings, in her opening statements, alluded that the defense may try to give life to the police conspiracy against Gleason. Gleason's defense also presents in its opening arguments, which centered largely around what Earle said was a lack of evidence. Earle tried to paint, basically, you know, he paints this picture of his client as a former Eagle Scout and an honor student. And he says, you know, come on, this guy's done all these good things. You really think he's going around shooting people? He's not guilty.
Right. It's crazy. But as the trial continued, more witnesses took the stand, including some that witnessed the murder on Alaska Street. A former LSU student testified that he watched in horror as a man made a U-turn in front of a Breck Park just north of the Baton Rouge campus and fatally shot Bruce Cofield. Co-Wesley Brown said he and a female friend were talking at a Breck's Alaska Street Park in the playground area around 11 p.m.
And Breck, y'all, is Baton Rouge
Parks. Yeah. That's the local park system. And they were talking around in the park around 11 p.m. when he noticed the headlights of a car making a U-turn in front of the park. After about 2 minutes, he heard a gunshot and turned around to see a man standing outside the car to get struck by a second shot and fall to the ground. He got out to finish shooting, Brown testified. I saw him stand over the victim and shoot some more. Mm-hmm. Brown said he heard 7 or 8 shots and did everything he could to try and save Smart's life before the emergency responders arrived. Then, now, East Baton Rouge Parish Coroner Bo Clark, another great guy, also testified that Smart suffered 8 gunshot wounds, y'all. FBI Special Agent Jeff Meffin, another great guy.
Yeah, guy too. Guy
also testified during the trial and said that the very morning after gunning down Bruce Cofield, Gleason searched the internet for best Nazi generals.
Uh-oh.
The Most Dangerous Game, which is a short story about a big game hunter turns to hunt humans, and preliminary hearing, a legal term in criminal cases, as well as searching the internet that same month for topics such as white nationalism, genocide, Nazi propaganda, and gun silencers.
How many times do we talk about search histories playing a huge role in these criminal cases on all of our podcasts? I mean, it's just insane how much that leads you to evidence-wise. So phone records, y'all, as they do in so many cases, they played a key aspect in this trial and indicated after Gleason shot into his neighbor's home, he searched for aggravated assault on his phone.
Right.
After he reportedly shot and killed Cofield and Smart, the records indicated he looked up news stories over the investigation into the murders. Defense attorney Jared Ambo argued that the prosecution, they were cherry picking those results in Gleason's search history. Well, you know, one of those things in and of itself may or may not have anything to do with it. I'm sure a lot of people searched about those murders when they occurred, but it was a combination of all of those things
together.
Yeah. So Ambo made the case that Gleason's internet search history included a vast array of topics, both good items such as Jesus and the Christian faith,
right,
along with European artists, and bad, including Nazis. Gleason's cell phone was also shown, here's you a key piece of evidence, to have pinged off a cell tower nearest to the crime scene at the same time Smart was gunned down. Prosecutors said that this was the only time Gleason's phone was in that area in the previous 45 days.
There you go.
That's some damning stuff, right? So attorney Hayes Town argued that the location provided by the phone records did not put Gleason at the murder scene, specifically pointing out the records simply showed his phone was somewhere in the area. I would agree with him there, and I think it's a problem.
Absolutely. So, and I agree with you also. So after a lot of back and forth on August 23rd, 2020, one nearly 4 years after the murders.
4 years later.
4 years later. And, you know, that y'all, is because all he had a really good defense team and everything, and all the motions to suppress and everything else, and challenging the evidence and whatever before it even gets to trial. So it just takes a long time. But nearly 4 years after the murders, Kenneth Gleason is found guilty for the murders of Cofield and Smart. And prosecutors want the death penalty. However, due to the urging of the families of the victims who asked that the death penalty not be sought in this case, prosecutors settled on life in prison with no parole. And here's a clip, y'all, of what that sounded like by CBS News affiliate WAFB.
Yeah, Scotty, this was not a death penalty case, as you said. That was at the request of the families of Kenneth Gleason's victims. But Judge Bo Higginbotham said today that the death penalty was really the only appropriate sentence that should have been handed down in this case. This case ended with emotional testimony from the families of Gleason's victims, Donald Smart and Bruce Cofield. Gleason was convicted of first-degree murder back in April. Assistant District Attorney Dana Cummings said Gleason was, quote, hunting black men during his 5-day reign of terror. The family painted pictures of how both men were very loved by their families and were integral in their lives. The sister of Smart, though, saying that she forgives Gleason for murdering her brother, praying that he finds God.
It's been very, very hard. That's my brother-in-law. That's my sister. It's been very hard. I had a close relationship with him. He took care of my kids with my sister, along with my sister. And he's very well missed, very well missed. He's like a brother to me. It's been hard and still hard.
This sentence coming on what would have been Donald Smart's 53rd birthday. The family saying that this is a great birthday present. Again, life without the possibility of parole for Kenneth Leeson and the murder of two black men back in 2017. At the courthouse, Austin Kemker, WAFB 9 News. Scotty, back to you.
So Gleason's only statement at sentencing was a written statement that simply said, I am innocent of the crime I have been accused of, right? But during the victim's impact statements, one of Smart's sisters, Renee McCoy, gave a heartfelt victim impact statement in court and noted that it would have been her only brother's 53rd birthday. Happy birthday, she said. McCoy also said her family has forgiven Gleason and added, we just ask that you try Jesus. To know Don was to love him, she said. He never met a stranger. He was our protector. And McCoy said the life sentence will prevent Gleason from committing these heinous crimes again. And Vincent Cofield described Gleason as a depraved and remorseless and said his brother slain was reprehensible in a victim impact statement, which he read to the court by the sister Linda McGee. Bruce Cofield had graduated from Southern University in 1980 with a mechanical engineering degree and worked for a time as a research engineer in Illinois before returning to Louisiana. Wow. Right?
Bet you didn't see that coming.
Exactly. But when he returned to Louisiana, he got married and had two children. And his brother said he worked at Fort Polk, which y'all is an army base in the western southern corner, almost southern corner of Louisiana. But despite his battles with drugs and depression, Bruce Cofield was a very valued member of our family, his brother wrote. We cannot put a price on our physical and emotional loss. Now, you have heard me talk about Hiller Moore, the East Baton Rouge District Attorney, super great guy. And Hiller Moore said after court that his office is hopeful that all the victims' families will be able to focus their energy on emotional healing, pleasant memories of their loved ones, and happier times to come. And it is telling that in spite of the overwhelming evidence presented at trial, Kenneth Gleason still refuses to take responsibility for his actions and express no remorse for these senseless murders and hateful crimes of violence. And that's what Hiller Moore, the DA, said.
Kenneth Gleason, he's headed to one place to spend the rest of that life, y'all. And
Angola.
That's right. Bloody Angola. Now, it's important to note right here, that Kenneth Gleason was a coward from the start, even in the way in which he committed the murders. And this is what stuck out to me and probably stuck out to a lot of you. He basically snuck attacked these men. Right. He didn't go up to them face to face, man to man.
While they were standing.
Yeah, while they were standing, where they had at least a shot of life. He stayed in his car in the comfort of his vehicle where he could haul ass if he missed them. Right. And he shot them from that car. And then when they went down, that's when he chose to get out and finish them off execution style. And now he was going to a prison in which cowards,
that'll last. And especially racist cowards.
Especially racist cowards.
You better believe the news knew about the Aryan searches and Nazi shit and all this bullshit this coward.
That's right. So what do you think happened after just 2 days? Of being transported to Bloody Angola. Well, I'll tell you what. Here's the clip of what happened.
Greg, officials with the Department of Public Safety and Corrections confirmed our reporting from earlier that Kenneth Gleason was found unresponsive and hanging in his cell in Angola at around midnight this morning. Now, Gleason had been an inmate at Angola for just 2 days after being transferred from the East Baton Rouge Parish Prison. He was in a single-man cell to abide by COVID-19 protocols for new inmates. Back in April, you may remember a jury found Gleason guilty of first-degree murder for the murders of Donald Smart and Bruce Cofield. The West Feliciana Parish Sheriff's Office, along with Angola, have started an investigation. I'm told this is standard protocols for deaths like this that take place in Angola. Greg.
Yep. The Coward's Way Out. On September 22nd, 2023, he kills himself by hanging himself with bedsheets in his cell. Remember way back at the beginning of the story when he asked to be taken off of suicide watch to Judge Trudy White? And I told you that was important. This is why. Kenneth Gleason was a coward the whole time, and likely had he ever had the chance, he would have killed himself way back then, even before his trial even started. Cowards take the coward's way out every single time without fail.
Right.
No exception.
He knew he was about to do some real hard time, right? So I tell y'all all the time that even the worst of the worst of evil people have a mother or a father or a sister somewhere that loves them. And certainly Kenneth Gleason was no different. After his death, his body was carried out of Angola for private burial. And just like anyone else, his family held a wake and announced it in the paper. They even had a site set up online where you could offer your condolences, believe it or not. So his obituary reads like this. Kenneth Gleason, April 5th, 1994 through September 22nd, 2021. Kenneth Gleason, 27, a resident of Baton Rouge, passed away on September 22nd, 2021. He was a 2012 graduate of Baton Rouge High School and attended LSU. As a member of the Boy Scout Troop 505, he became an Eagle Scout in 2012. Kenneth was survived by his sister, parents, and numerous aunts and uncles and cousins. He was preceded in death by his grandparents, and visiting hours will take place, blah, 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 on Tuesday, blah, blah, blah. Family and friends may sign the online guest book or leave a personal note to family at www.resthavenbatonrouge.com. Right?
Yeah. And
no mention about being basically a racist serial killer.
That's right.
Two more people killed at separate times. And he did that. They never called him a serial killer, but he's a straight up serial killer and a racist serial killer at that.
Right. And you know, Woody, you say it all the time, even the worst of the worst or somebody that loves him. Yeah, and these people, I'm sure, loved him. And that's why we didn't say names.
And look, they're suffering too.
They're suffering too.
You notice we left out the names of the family members and all that. And I hate it for them.
I do too.
I hate it that whatever flipped the script inside this dude's head from being an Eagle Scout to erase a serial killer.
Yeah.
Happened.
Right. And so.
But I hate it for the victim's family's worse.
Right. And so you may think, y'all, that this is the end of the story for Kenneth Gleason, right? I mean, he's dead. Right. He's gone. Well, not exactly. 6 weeks after he was found hanged in that cell in Angola, self-hanged, by the way, in September of 2021, attorneys for the Louisiana Appellate Project filed an appeal on Gleason's behalf.
Yeah.
In her petition, Madisonville lawyer Catherine Franks invoked an obscure legal doctrine known as abatement from the beginning. So let me tell y'all about this. The precedent had been set by the state Supreme Court in 1976. It basically requires courts not only to dismiss a conviction if the guilty party dies while an appeal is pending, but also calls for the conviction and sentence to be totally vacated and tossed out. So it's, and this was used very, there was a lot of press around the fact that Aaron Hernandez, a former NFL player who also committed suicide in prison while his appeal was going on, basically that law completely erased the conviction because, you know, the argument there is, well, they didn't get a chance to appeal. You know what? Here's my thought on that. And I'm going to agree with Hiller Moore, who actually came out. He fought this all the way to the state Supreme Court. So they overturned that and took this away. And Hiller Moore fights it to the state Supreme Court, and he files a writ asking the Supreme Court to do away with that doctrine and instead adopt what's known as the Alabama law. That's a law in which other states that have a suicide exemption for cases like Gleason's, it allows the court to maintain the conviction while noting in the record that the appeal was never addressed.
Because they kill themselves like a bitch.
Right. And in the end, the state Supreme Court agreed with Hiller Moore, and on November 10th of 2022, the conviction for Kenneth Gleason was reinstated. Now, you may say, what does it matter? He's dead. What difference does it make? Well, I can assure you, it makes all the difference in the world to the families of his victims.
Absolutely.
And that, in the end, is what matters most.
Absolutely.
And that, y'all, is...
It's crazy.
Another bloody Angola story that ended up in a suicide.
Ended in bloody Angola.
Yep.
He wasn't even through being processed where he's going to be put yet. He was in a single man cell when he first gets there. And 2 days later, he hangs himself.
Hangs himself. Yeah. Coward.
Yeah.
A couple of announcements, and then Woody's going to do some announcements. Just real quick for y'all, our Warden team members, which are our highest supporters on Patreon, and no matter what level you are, we love all of you. Appreciate all. If you're not a level, we still love and appreciate you.
Afford to be one or don't want to be one, still love and appreciate you.
That's right. Sure. But I do want to let those people know that their quarterly gift is on the way this week. So you'll be look for that in your mailbox. And if I sent you a message on Patreon asking for your address, just send it to me so I can send it to you.
You get your prize.
That's
hey,
right.
If y'all, we love it when you get those quarterly gifts and if you'll post a picture with it.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll share that everywhere. It means a lot to us. And thank you so much for doing it. Show couldn't run without you.
That's right.
Of course, you get your commercial free, early releases and all that stuff that our regular listeners don't get. But you've been with us since the beginning, most of you, and more are adding all the time, and we appreciate
that's right.
that.
And your bonus episode is coming also yes. to you in the next probably 4 or 5 days.
Right,
so look
right.
for that.
It's going to be love.
Yeah.
Right? And y'all, if you would, continue to – most importantly is continue to subscribe because – the podcast world's coming out with some more bullshit like they do every like 3 or 4 years. They
yes.
try to change things up for the commercial people. So without going into it, doesn't matter. But if you're subscribed, make sure you're still subscribed or because they're canceling subscriptions after X amount of days. Let's say you've been gone a month and hadn't listened. You might not get the automatic downloads. Just make sure you're still subscribed. And if you wonder why you hadn't heard an episode, it may be because of this new situation they're putting it through, but we don't want you to miss any, and we love it, each and every one of y'all, and appreciate you so much.
That's right. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
Your host of Bloody
Angola.
A podcast, 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, Gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Wrangler.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started on your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save